You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Jumping Knee Pod, a modern-day All Japan Pro Wrestling podcast. I'm Jessica, your host, and today back with me again is Simone.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you again for having me, and welcome to everyone.
Yes. We have a bonus episode for you today covering Yuma Anzai's reign as Triple Crown champion. For 140 days, Anzai carried the Triple Crown belt and successfully defended it five times, before meeting his wall that he couldn't get past, Yuma Aoyagi. And just a side note, that the day we are recording is actually Yuma Anzai's 2-year debut anniversary. We did not plan this. Yeah, it's just good timing.
I didn't know. Yeah, cool. I mean, that's great.
I knew it was in September, but I didn't actually know the date until like I saw other people saying like, happy anniversary, Yuma. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm awful at this kind of thing. I mean, if someone doesn't spell it for me, I never remember who debuted when. Never. So it's good that, I mean, social are nice for this kind of things. They remind you of things, dates and all that stuff. So it's very cool. It's nice happenstance.
Yeah. So thank you to that Twitter user who posted happy debut on site. I didn't save the screenshot, so I don't know who you were, but thank you. So we're going to start off all the way back March 30th with Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Yuma Anzai. And I guess you can call this one controversial. There are so many different opinions on it. Anzai really only got like his control of the match like right at the start, and then it was Nakajima for the whole rest of the match, except for the last couple of seconds. I was sure Nakajima was winning, not counting the new Chronicle Z show, which not all All Japan wrestlers appear on. This was the last show before the Champion Carnival. To have a title change right before, especially because Anzai was competing in the Carnival while Nakajima was not, was wild to me. Anzai did show a lot of fight here. It kind of flowed into the way his carnival went, especially with how he got dominated and he had to fight back. We'll get into that with some more matches.
Yes.
But one thing to note here is the submission hold Nakajima had on Anzai was the one that Kento tapped out to on the 31st of December. So that's 1 point for Anzai over Kento. Do you have any thoughts on this match at all?
The one with Nakajima.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird one, especially if we compare the match with all that happened after the match, all the other defenses and the carnival too. And it was very weird because, as you said, he basically had no control throughout the whole match. He was basically bullied the whole time. Then he had his comeback at the end, not that many moves actually. He pinned Nakajima, Nakajima gets up and leaves without even selling I mean, it was a big upset. I think it deserved a better, I don't know. It felt very weird. Also, the match was weird from the get-go because, I don't know if you remember, the day before or the same day, Nakajima posted that long thread in which he was basically saying goodbye to All Japan. He was basically talking about his experience in All Japan. And also, Anzai had that pinky promise thing that, I mean, he still carries that thing today. Not that frequently, but he still does it. And he promised the All Japan faithful that he was going to bring the belt back in the promotion. So, I mean, they kind of spelled it out for us. But, yeah, it was very weird. But it was useful because we will talk about it when we go through the other matches. It really shows a sense of development for Anzai. And I don't know if this is due to the fact that they changed bookers basically at the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, sorry. So we now are seeing the first reign of a different champion with another booker. So I don't know if it's the formula that is changed, but his reign really felt different because he showed the kind of aspect of All Japan work style that we haven't seen that much in the past years because, I mean, from Akiyama and after, All Japan had become the promotion that had the most measured style of all the promotions you can find in Japan. And with Nakajima, but we will say more about this when we go to the matches. I think we're seeing something different. We've seen something different.
Just one more note on that match. It's just what happened after. I believe the post-match was a huge turning point for All Japan. We know there has been a youth movement and the young stars have been pushed in the last year, but this was like the first time they've actually shown it and made it official. Like, yeah, the youths are taking over. Anzai holding the Triple Crown belt high was joined by junior heavyweight champion Ryzen Hayato, world tag team champions Junior Ray Sato, and one half of the All-Asia tag team champions Dan Tamura. It was a huge moment for All Japan. It seemed to calm the All Japan fans down and get the company back on track after the extremely rocky end of 2023 and start of 2024 for the company. And it was all led by Yuma Anzai at the forefront.
Yeah, that was very cool. I remember at the time, people were pretty hyped about the, I think they're called the Super New Era, the generational shift. It is very cool. I mean, I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. I've seen All Japan do this kind of thing more than once. I actually don't remember the name of the stable that Suwama had when he won the Triple Crown in I think 2010 with Soya, Sanada, and Yodahama. And I don't remember if there was something. I mean, I'm bad at this kind of thing, but I'm always a sucker for this kind of stuff. They have me hyped, and seeing the guys all together in the ring. I mean, we were just having the end of the Saito's Voodoo Murders run. So basically, they were basically ill at the time. I mean, they weren't because they were so popular that people were cheering for them at the time. So kind of particular as ills go. But I mean, it was very cool. It was very cool. And I think it gave the fans a sense of calm that it was very needed because luckily we are now in a more serene time for All Japan. But at the time, it was very tough. There were talks of coups, brainwashings, all this kind of stuff that made pretty tough to follow them. And this was a very breath of fresh air, a very needed breath of fresh air that was good. And I mean, we are still seeing the ripples of this event because these guys are still on. I mean, not all of them have belts right now, but they are still on top of the promotion. And I can see from the way they're booking them right now, I mean, it's not going to change anytime soon. And I think it's very cool. It's very, very cool. And of course, this is due to Anzai's popularity, I think, because, I mean, the Saitos, Tamura, Hayato, the guys are all extremely popular with the crowd. But having someone who can lead the charge, someone who's this young, because he's basically still a rookie, and being this capable of bringing all the fans together and carrying the promotion on his back, because I mean, he was given the belt very early in his career, and I think we will talk about this going forward, but I don't think he showed any kind of issue in the space that they're giving him. And this is extremely important, I think.
This moment kind of felt like a reboot, like a restart for the company. It was
Yes.
hard being a fan at the start of the year. It was really hard because you're trying to be positive, but everybody's just trying to be negative, like, oh, Japan's over, this company's dead. I struggled a
Yes.
bit. I wanted to be positive, but we needed something, and this is what we needed. We're gonna get into Anzai's matches now. I just want to say something that kind of covers them all. So there's going to be a running theme during his reign, and that's a lack of build. If we were lucky, we got one or two shows between title matches, but for some others, we got none, like none at all. The problem with Anzai being so young as champion is he doesn't yet have the feuds and big matches to pull back on for backstory like a Kento or Yuma. He obviously will get there with the more he wrestles and the more backstory he builds up, but it's something we needed that his first title reign didn't have.
Yeah, ironically, the build, which was non-existent, as you said, was given by the match themselves. I mean, was given by who he was facing. For example, we'll see Honda, Rei Saito, and Kento, and Yuma at the end. But I remember when we recorded the episode together when for the July tour, we were talking about this weird thing that they were doing. I remember saying at the time that I thought they were trying something new. They were trying to see how the youngs could fare, giving them big matches and big shows without that much build to see what they were working with. I still think it was the case. I mean, I don't think it hindered the reign too much, but yeah, it would have been cool to have more build. I think they didn't want to give Anzai too long a reign because he's still very fresh, very young. So they wanted to see what he could do, giving him all those big matches without having him to have the belt for 1 year. Damaged a little bit the preparation, the build for the matches because, yeah, I think a lot of the defenses had one, two tops matches that were preludes of the little matches, but they seemed a little bit random. I don't think people were enticed by those matches. I mean, the interest were in and by themselves, the matches. And so, I don't know, it was fascinating. It was very different, very different. The booger is another person. And so maybe this is how they work. I don't know. I don't know. We will see. We will see.
We're now getting into the matches themselves. So I'll give like a little backstory to how we got there. And first up is Kento Miyahara, and their match was on the 29th of May. Kento gained the right to challenge after defeating Jun Saito in the Champion Carnival Finals. With Anzai dethroning Kento as youngest Triple Crown champion ever, many think he'll also take his role as ace from him. With Kento still at the top of his game, this was never going to be a passing of the torch moment, but it could have been the start of Anzai's rise. And like, what a way to start your first ever reign to take on the ace of the company. It's not the first time these two have faced each other. Kento won the first meeting, so it's tied at one apiece, but Anzai won the more important match, being this title match.
Yeah, this was interesting because as we said before, the match against Nakajima, the one where he won the belt, basically gave him nothing in when it comes to, I don't know, believability. So this was the first step that he had to prove to the people and to himself that he was a rightful champion. Because I mean, the way the match against Nakajima was booked, people could think it was a fluke. And I think it was kind of what it was implied in the match. But from this defense onward, I think we saw a particular side of the storytelling of his matches that was very interesting. Then basically in this match and all the others, except one, I think, I seem to remember, he basically came on top on every exchange. When they were trading elbows, he was the last one to hit, to hit. When they were trading suplex, he was the last one to hit, which I think it was kind of done to show that he was not there by chance. He was there to prove himself that he was a rightful champion. This match had a lot of nods, I think. And another thing that it started is that from the Carnival onward, he started adding moves to his repertoire. When he beat Nakajima, he only had the jumping knee, the double arm suplex, and the German suplex. Basically, it was there. That was all. He started adding moves, which I think it was another thing to prove that he was growing up. He was getting a better champion and a better wrestler. It was very cool to see. I don't think it was done by chance. I think it was a deliberate choice.
Yeah, I thought there was no doubt this was a great match. Like, you can put anybody against Kenta in a Triple Crown match and it will always deliver. I kind of thought Anzai was beaten down a lot, but seeing as who he was against and what match it was for, especially because Triple Crown matches are like Kenta's specialty, I thought it was okay. I was like, yeah, I'm okay with this. There has to be an apron spot in a big Kenta match. This time It was Anzai delivering a beautiful dragon suplex. That was so good. But what really got me in this match was Anzai delivering his own shutdown suplex and Kento's face. That was just the cherry on top of this match.
Yeah, I had it in my notes. Yeah, the shutdown was a very cool moment. Another thing that I don't think it was done by chance, it was the jumping drop kick as a counter. I posted on Twitter at the time. It was basically frame by frame the drop kick that Jumbo did against Baba. I don't think it was done by chance. I think it was another deliberate choice. And I think it was very cool because it fitted a lot with the theme of the match, because it was this young champion, this kid, because he's 24, 25, against another. I mean, Kento is still young. Kento is 35. He's still very young in the great scheme of things, especially for Japanese wrestling standards. But I mean, he's still a legend. He's been around for a long time. So, I mean, it was facing the dragon, basically. And as you said before, this was never going to be a passing of the torch moment because Kento is way too young to go away anytime soon, I think. But also, I think, and another thing that we will talk about later, they made the obstacle another person, not Kento, which was very cool. We will get there.
I did have trouble with Kento being Anzai's first opponent, but looking back now on his reign, I think having Kento Suama and Hideki at first to kind of guide Anzai and ease him in becoming a champion and the younger guys later, I actually really liked it. I don't know if it was their intention, but I do give them full marks if it was, and if not, that's just how I see it.
Yeah, basically he faced for his first three matches, I mean, three guys who were basically dominant figures of the past 15 years in Japanese wrestling. I mean, I remember seeing at the time on Twitter people saying, I mean, is he going to win? Is basically he's been fed giants and legends. And I remember people having doubts about his first defense against Kento. A lot of people were in doubt that he was going to end up on top, which was very cool. I mean, this gave the beginning of the reign a kind of edge, which, I mean, it was cool.
Next up, we're going to go to Hideki Suzuki, and they faced off on the 24th of June. So after Anzai's first ever successful defense, Hideki came out from the back, laid one hand on the title bar, and left without saying a word. It was all he needed to do to let everyone know he was next in line. Hideki and Anzai has had a couple of run-ins in the last year, with Hideki coming out on top in their last match using his wrestling style to win. What did you think, Simone?
I mean, I think this was the most technical of all his defenses. I mean, Hideki is a tough cookie because, I mean, I love Hideki, but I know a lot of people have problems with him because he's the guy that no sells most of the time. He's the guy who is extremely competitive in his style. And sometimes he seems to be, I don't know, kind of working against the match, which is, I think, the problem a lot of people have with him. But, I mean, knowing him, knowing his background, knowing what he represents in Japanese wrestling, I think it is something that makes him different. It is who he is. And I think the match reflected this kind of aspect of his style. because it was absolutely hands down the most technical defenses of all the ones that Anzai had. It showed the, a side of his style that is not seen that often, because Idegi is a master technician. I mean, I think it showed that both had a counter for everything the other did, which was extremely cool. It was an incredibly competitive match, which at the time I think was needed, because it was his second defense. He was showing that he was, I mean, again, a rightful champion. The a thing I liked a lot, it was the storytelling about the double arm suplex, which is Hideki's move, because the man who invented the move basically is his teacher and passed the move to him. So Hideki in his matches never sells the double arm suplex. And in this match, I think Anzai tried to hit the move four times before finally hitting from the top rope. Mm. And Hideki didn't sell at all. And I think it was very funny. And also I think this was another match that sets up a precedent, which was that Anzai basically was able to counter everything that the opponents showed to him, put against him, which was very cool. Which was very, very cool. And also I liked a lot the final 2 or 3 minutes when, I mean, it was very, it was kind of weird, because they looked very, very tired, and it was showed, it was told in the story of the match. I think it worked well, because neither of them could eat any move, because they were basically flopping and falling down, which headed to the theme of the match, which was the struggle. I think if I had to use one word to describe this match, was struggle. And I think it worked well for what it was at the moment of his reign.
Yeah, basically everything you said, I agree with. It was a lot different from a Kento match, but you're going to expect that with Hideki. He's always had an edge over Anzai, and this was the time to show that edge has gone. And Anzai did it in the best way, and that was beating Hideki at his own game. I think that surprised so many people, especially myself, because Hideki's just always had that little bit of head start over Anzai when it comes to matches. He's always found a way to get to him, found a way to lock on a submission. Just he always found a way, basically. So Anzai really needed to show, like, okay, no, I've learned from this. I can actually come out of this on top. And he did. Hideki was more happy than ever to be the main senior here, delivering elbows. Remember, like, he had like Anzai's hands behind his back, so Anzai couldn't even defend himself. You don't get that in a Kento match. Kento is not that mean. He wouldn't do that. He'll hit you with like a knee strike, but he wouldn't do that. Hideki and Anzai did share a handshake at the end, and it does seem like Anzai has put Hideki away for good. Like, there was no doubt who's on top of this rivalry.
Yeah, it was very cool. Also, I think this was the only match of all these defenses in which he didn't face someone who had something to do with him in particular, because other than that, he faced Kento. I mean, who is Kento? Suwama, with Suwama. Yuma Oyagi, who is the man who trained him. Honda, that is basically his partner. I mean, right now, not right now, but I mean, he's his companion and possibly and probably is a generational rival. And you put these guys, and then you have Hideki, who basically had nothing in common with Anzai, but I mean, is someone who's very important in the backstage. So I mean, if we put this match in the context, it was a very important match, because yes, he faced people who meant something to him, but he also faced someone who means something in the promotion, in the bigger scheme, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think having to face someone like outside the company, that's always a good thing to look at, like how they do. And he did fantastic against Hideki.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up for Anzai was Suwama, and that was the 13th of July. A surprise challenger was next. Suwama made his way out with his eyes on the belt. While Kento and Hideki had the right to challenge, they won the champion carnival and defeated Anzai in 1-on-1. Suwama had none. He lost to Anzai in the carnival, but he had one big announcement for this match. He said it'll be the last time he ever challenged for the Triple Crown Championship. This match was
Yeah,
chock
right.
full of emotion. Swama announced this will be his last Triple Crown challenge ever, and it felt like the end of the era. And just like everyone else, I fell for it. We
Yeah,
found
me
out
too.
later that Swama went back on his deal. He's like, nah, I still want the belt.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Another big point, like we said before, Suama was the one who scouted Anzai for All Japan. Anzai's first win was against Suama in December 2022. He is Suama's boy, but there was no way he was going to go easy on him. The problem I had with this match, it did feel like a bit like, can Suama still go? Does he have one more reign left? Rather than, can Anzai beat Suama? Because we have seen him beat Suama. So this became more of a Suama match than an Anzai one. I did enjoy it more than most people, like I said before. It was different from the first two. It basically came down to who can outlast the other one longer while throwing just big moves. And another big talking point from this match is Anzai won with the Suama backdrop. I wouldn't be
Yes.
surprised if down the line Suama gifts it to Anzai.
Yeah, it would be good. Yeah, I agree. This match was weird because as you said, I was another one who fell for Suama's. Yeah, this is my last run. Yeah, okay. And it was very emotional watching the match. Also, it was weird because they bought this kind of match, which I mean is still a big match, it's still Suama. Even if he's getting older, he's still Suama. You put this match in the Odeon Second, which is it's a very cool and respected place. It's a very storied place to book matches too. But I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's a small place, it's a small venue. I mean, this kind of match could bring, I think, a good Korakuen crowd. And so it was weird. Also, yeah. Anzai had the edge on Suama because he beat him in the carnival with the face lock, which was basically the move that he promised Fuchi, who was the one who told him the move, that he was going to beat Suama with the move, and he did it. And so at the moment, I mean, the big question was, is Suama going to go down another time against Anzai twice in a row? And as you said, this was a bit controversial as a little match. I liked it. Again, like as you said, more than most people apparently. And also, it was very impressive given what we know nowadays that Suama was suffering from vertigo, and the fact that he was able to put a 20. I don't know. I don't remember exactly how long it was. I think it was 21 minutes. I mean, given his condition was not something to be taken for granted. The biggest selling point of the match, I think, was the ending, because the backdrop is, I think, above all the others, All Japan's move, because it was the move that Jumbo used to have as a finisher, the move that Misawa reversed to get his first big win against Jumbo. Then it was the move that Suama made the biggest deal out of all the moves because he started with last ride but ditched the move pretty early to go for the backdrop. And this there are nowadays still Suama's move and All Japan's move. So having Anzai survive, I think, a barrage of three backdrops, one after the other, and then putting down Suama with the same move, it was very cool. And also keeping in the trend of adding new moves. Nowadays he's still using the backdrop. He used it in other big matches, so I think it was very cool because it was showing that Anzai was still learning new tricks to get down, to keep down the big guys. It was very cool, I think.
I think in Anzai's reign, he needed to face Suama. I just wish Suama didn't have this, like, oh, this is my last challenge, and then take it away, because it kind of spoils the match looking back on it now. But I guess, like, they needed, like, a hook for more people to watch, because I saw a lot of discussion on this saying, like, yeah, it's the end of the era for Suama.
Yeah,
But.
it's true. It maybe became too much about Suama and not enough about Anzai. Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
But he defeated Suama, and next up was Rookie Honda on the 20th of July.
Yeah,
The
the boy.
former New Period tag team turned Alpida teammates faced off 1-on-1 during the Champion Carnival, main eventing over Kento versus Yuma Aoyagi. With this win, Honda marked Anzai's first loss as Triple Crown champion. Despite that, he had to wait in line for a while and get his earned title shot. Take it away.
Yeah. Yeah, this was very fun. Also, it was I think this was one of the matches that was put in the barrage of title matches. Yeah, a week after the match against Suwama, and like 2 weeks away from the other defense, which I mean, at the end of the day, it's a lot. I was always going to love this match because I am the biggest fan. I mean, I think on the planet of this generational shift of Old Japan. So seeing these two guys, which I mean, Honda is 24. If things go according to plan, him and Anzai are going to have the ball for a long time, you know, in the Old Japan court. I think it was a very good match. It lacked the edge because, I mean, I think everyone knew who was going to win. I don't think it was a mystery that Honda was never going to win the belt this way, which kind of damaged a little bit because there wasn't a surprise at the end of the day. But the match in itself was great, and it showed a lot of details that I liked a lot, which was that Honda knew how to basically reverse everything that every big move of Anzai. There were a couple of moments which I marked out, like for example when Anzai tried to hit the jumping knee, and Honda caught him midair and slammed it with kind of a final bend, but not really. And also when another time when he was trying to Yuma Anzai was trying to hit him another time with the jumping knee, and Honda stayed on the rope to hit a big lariat. I mean, it was cool because the theme of the matches before was that Anzai was able to reverse everything that the other were trying to put against him. And in this match, the theme was Honda was able to reverse what Anzai was doing. At this point in time, Anzai was the big guy. Honda was the underdog, which I think it was a very different match from the others, and I liked it a lot. Also, I mean, it was very spectacular. It was snappy. It wasn't a long match. I think it was one of the shortest of his reign, but it was very, very fun. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it felt a lot faster than the other three. I guess like this being Anzai's first younger opponent, it made
Yes.
sense. But I thought Honda reversing the jumping knee to the final bend, that got me. I was on the edge of my th
Yes.
seat thinking, oh, holy shit, like Honda actually might win this. I will never bet against Kento in the Triple Crown match. Suwama and Hideki, I thought, okay, they're losing. I always thought Yuma Aoyagi would take the belt off Yuma Anzai, but here I like had like a little heart attack. I'm like, holy moly, like Honda's got this. He didn't, obviously. But I think these two, you can definitely see the start of a generational rivalry, like we said before. They so easily fit into the Kento Yuma Aoyagi mold. Anzai is on his way to becoming the ace, taking Kento's spot, while Honda is always chasing Yuma spot. We said last time we were on together that like Honda's the heir to Yuma's goofiness. So he has
Yes.
that part of his character to him. It's like the perfect guy to take Yuma's spot. Like this is Kento and Yuma, but just a younger version. It's crazy. These two guys are still very young in career-wise. Main eventing a packed Hurricane Hall and they absolutely killed it. Like you'd love to see it. Main event in day three of the carnival and this show over Kento and Yuma and Kento and Hayato is huge and they absolutely deserve it. The crowd is so invested in these two and it seems like the company is as well, which you'd love to see.
Yeah, I agree. It was the big theme of the match, and not only the match. I think the past few months that there are new faces. These guys are coming up on top. You like it or not, these guys are going to be in the scene. They are here to stay, which was not only very cool but also deserved. Because if you are trying to establish new faces, you have to be brave. You have to give them something to remember. And it is important to give them this space, the space to breathe, to have big matches. And also, the crowd was very into it because we never talked about it right until this moment. But I think every defense had love out crowd. Some matches more than others. We'll talk about the next one, which had a nuclear crowd. But all these matches had an incredibly loud reaction from the crowd, which, I mean, the crowd was there on an number standpoint. Those were very, very large crowds inside. Also, they were very present in their loudness. So, I mean, if they were trying to see something, I guess they had their answers, which were positive, by the way.
We move on to the next Triple Crown match, which is Rei Saito, and that was on the 3rd of August. On the day of Suama versus Anzai, Rei announced his challenge for the title. He said he has no idea who his opponent will be, but it doesn't matter as he will beat them. Rei didn't just beat Anzai in the Chemi Carnival to earn his shot, he demolished him easily. This title shot is a long time coming for Rei, who was scheduled to face Katsuhiko Nakajima at the start of the year, but had to drop out due to injury. So this is Anzai's second younger opponent, but not in age, in in-ring experience. I was a little disappointed with this one, just seeing how much Anzai was dominated in it. Like I said before, Rei demolished Anzai in the carnival. It would have been nice for Anzai to learn from that and counter Rei, just like he did with Hideki. We've seen it before. But other than that little bit, this match was great. Rei was definitely the hero here. If you book a show in Sendai, the crowd will show up, and they're showing up for two guys only, and that's Jun and Rei. It's the hometown boys. They love them. One thing I liked in this match is how good Rei is in a big situation. I know this episode is about Anzai's reign, but what I took from this match is just Rei. And just how good he is. Like, we haven't seen him in a big match yet. We've seen him in singles, but nothing this big. We've seen Jun. He's delivered. He's absolutely delivered. But this was Rei's turn.
Yes.
And he was just fantastic. But, you know, Anzai was as well. This match was just blow after blow after blow. It was so loud. The crowd was just, it was a Sendai match. You would get that if you watched All Japan when they go to Sendai with the Saitos. But it's just such a special thing. You just have to watch one. And if you do, pick this match.
Yeah, I agree. I don't even know where to start about this match because I have feelings about this match. I mean, first thing first, All Japan in Sendai, when the Saitos are mainlining, you know, it's going to be incredible. We've had past experiences with them, for example, when they won the duck belts for the first time. The crowd is always lava hot for them. I think the last 10 to 5 minutes were lunacy. I don't know if I've ever heard the crowd so loud in a match in at least in the past years. It was incredible. It was like if you put a bear against a man. Rei Saito tried the whole time to turn Anzai into mush. It was incredible. He literally beat the shit out of him. And he has...
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
A massive, massive wrestling brain. I say this every time I talk about the Saito brothers, which, I mean, I've been screaming from the rooftops since they debuted about this. I think they had, from the get-go, a massive wrestling brain. And you see that when you put them in any situation, they will always make the best of it. You put Rei Saito headlining a big show in Sendai, he's going to deliver. He's going to understand what he has to do to how to portray himself, how to be, in this case, a believable challenger from a guy who was beating a big name after the other. At that point, was starting to look unbeatable. And also, these two I mean, in a sense, they are generational rival, because even if Rey is, I think, 10 year, more than 10 years older than Yuman Zai, career-wise, they're very similar. They are still, if we take Tokyo Sports idea for that, they're still rookies, both of them. So to have the two guys that like 6 years in two of career combined, it's incredible that they can show this kind of match. It's unbelievable. But I mean, I knew going in the match that it was going to be good, because I believe in them absolutely wholeheartedly. And they both, I think, were stellar in what they were trying to do. Rey was trying to be portrayed as a monster, and he is incredible at doing that. And Yuma, on the other hand, was trying to show that he was able to withstand this tornado called Rey Saito. And as you said, I mean, it was more about Rey than it was about Yuma. But they were in Sendai, it was always going to happen. But Yuma and Zai being able to withstand this kind of monster was very important, I think, for his career. And also, as I said, they are two of the main faces of the Super New Era, because the tag belts in All Japan are not a mid-card belts. This is something that needs to be said every time, because a lot of people go into All Japan believing that the tag belts are like 90% of other promotions a mid-card belts. A mid-card belt in All Japan, this is not the case. If you get the tag belts, you are a main eventer, through and through. And so for this reason, this was a very big match. And also, it kept in line with what I was talking about, for example, with Honda. They were trying to see what they could afford with their new faces. I mean, this is what you can afford. You can go blind on them.
I did enjoy how much Anzai really had to dig deep to find a way to win. It showed great resilience and strength from him. He actually got Rey out for the gimlet, which I thought he would never do, because Rey's a big guy. Too. But that was great. And the thing with the crowd is, go listen to when Anzai gets a three count. They were screaming like they were at a concert. So Anzai was the villain in this one, because they all love Rey. But when he won, they still love him.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Because, I mean, even in Sendai, he had the crowd behind him. It was very interesting, very, very cool. And it's another important thing going forward, I think.
I do want to take like a little detour here. One thing I do want to say about the Saitos, I don't know if it was this one or the last time they went back to Sendai. If you don't understand how over they are, I will tell you. All Japan gave out forms for fans to fill out for their merchandise. I've never seen that happen with any other wrestler before in All Japan or ever. They had to fill out the forms if they want merchandise, because it flies off the shelf so fast with them. And it's so good to see just how far these brothers have come and how much their hometown supports them.
Yeah, I see on Twitter, people are talking about, people who go to the shows, however, by the way, they talk about how long the queues are for getting into the show themselves and to watch them, to have their autographs, to get signing from the big guys. And especially the Saitos, they have an incredible queue. I don't remember in which occasion, but someone, I think it was a Korakuen, someone posted a pic of the queue for the people who were waiting to have their I don't know if they were getting signed something by the Saitos, and it was an incredibly long queue, and it was very, very interesting to see. And I mean, we shall never forget that these guys, in the great scheme of things, debuted yesterday. They are new faces, and to see that they are this popular, it is very important for the promotion going forward. And I think they could say this about Rey and Jun, they could say this about Honda, they could say this, of course, about Anzai. But I think even Tamura or new faces like Kai Ayabe, they are getting incredibly popular. And I think this was one of my main takeaways of this reign, is that the new faces are very hot. And the new face in particular of this generation is an incredibly hot guy, which is popular everywhere, even when he's the enemy, like in Sendai. I mean, my main takeaway of the match is that, as you said rightfully, Anzai went there being the enemy, the guy who had to lose. When he won, people were out of their mind happy. And I think this is a testament of how good this reign has been for both Anzai and All Japan.
I think it was funny. Yuma Aoyagi said, when I win the Triple Crown champion, I'm going to be selfish and not accept a title challenge from Juno Ray if it's in Sendai. And watching this, I completely understand it.
Yeah, Yuma is a fun guy. A very fun guy.
But yeah, just this match was great just to see Anzai get back into it, get beat down again, get up again, get beat down again, just over and over, and him just pulling through just to win. I think it's a must watch of his career. His title match.
I agree.
I agree
with you. If you had to see just one match, but I mean, when you're at it, watch them all. But I think if you had to watch one match, this is one to watch.
We move on to his last defense, and that was Yuma Aoyagi on the 17th of August. So back on the 20th of July, Yuma defeated Ren Ayabe in a number one contenders match for the Triple Crown. It's been less than a year since Yuma held the Triple Crown after defeating Yuji Nagata for it last year. And the only person he couldn't beat in his reign, and the one Anzai could, was Nakajima. What do you think of this, Simone?
This was very interesting. I mean, we all have thoughts about Nakajima's reign, I think. I mean, admittedly, I'm not that big about it. On it, I'm not the biggest fan of what Nakajima brought to the table. And I think the way it happened, him beating Yuma, was devastating for what the promotion was at the time. I think it completely stopped their momentum. And Yuma Aoyagi being the next in line, I mean, gave me feelings because I wanted this match to go in a certain way. I mean, even if go against what we are doing right now, I mean, talking about Anzai's reign, in this case, was very important that Yuma Aoyagi needed to win, I think. Even for Anzai's story, this was an important match.
If you listen to the last episode I did with Smiley, you know how I feel about this match. It was good. It should have been great. It really disappoints me because I just wanted so much more for this match. I love these two Yumas. Like, Suama scouted Anzai, but Yuma's the one who trained him. He's the one who got him ring ready. And like, look where he is now, youngest Triple Crown champion, and he's putting on fantastic matches. And this should have been one, but it wasn't.
Yeah, someday we need to talk about what Yuma is doing in the dojo, which, I mean, it sounds sinister, but it is meant to be something good. He is an incredible trainer, and what he's doing in the dojo needs to be studied because he's getting guys with no experience or guys who are around but doing nothing especially spectacular, like, for example, Ren Ayabe. And a few months into the dojo, they come out and they are monsters. They are ready to go against whoever. And this needs to be studied because most of All Japan's current glory passes through Yuma Aoyagi, both as a champion, as a wrestler, and as a trainer and whatever he does behind the scenes. Because I don't know if he does something else besides being the head trainer at the dojo. I think he said that he wanted to become the next chairman president. And he even said that he wanted to bring Shuji Ishigawa back. I don't know if he seems pretty ambitious in what he wants to be in All Japan, and I'm fully behind him. As I was saying, in the dojo, he's a god. He's an incredible trainer. I mean, talking about the Saito brothers, they didn't get this good by chance. They got this good because, one, they are incredibly smart, Two, they know what they're doing. They know who they are and who they have to be in All Japan, in a promotion like All Japan. And three, because they had an incredible trainer like Yuma Oyagi. I think he didn't have a single miss ever since he stepped foot in the dojo as a trainer. Every guy that trained under him became, or at least is on his way to become a star. I think Honda is the next one. Already, I mean, I've been a fan of Honda since he was a rookie, but what he's becoming is something to really watch out for.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, you got Honda, Dan, Hokuto, Asuki, they all trained under Yuma. And look at them now. Yes. Like, they're stars. They can main event any show, basically. They've been champions. All of them have been champions, actually. Getting back to the match, one thing I actually liked was the press conference for this. They have tons of respect for one another. As I said, in previous Triple Crown matches, he didn't want to lose. But in this one, he would be recognized by Aoyagi and surpass him. Also, he hasn't worn the belt around his waist, but he'll do so when he defeats Aoyagi. Like, tough luck, Anzai. Sorry about that. He seems to think that defeating Aoyagi will let him become a true Triple Crown champion. And I get that. And I just love it so fucking much that Yuma is saying this about the other Yuma. Yuma Oyagi. He's not saying this about Kento. He's not saying this about Sawama. He's saying this about Yuma. Like, goddamn, I love this so much. Yuma is a wall for him, and he sees that, and he knows that. While Oyagi is not actually officially part of the new era, he feels like he is. And Anzai making it clear now how he feels about beating Yuma just cements how important this new era is to the company.
Yeah, I agree. This was my main takeaway. The press conference was great, was very interesting. And it also paved the way for what needed to be the result. If Yuma Anzai said that his main obstacle right now is Yuma Oyagi, in his first train, he needed to lose against Yuma Oyagi. Especially because, as we said before, Yuma Oyagi is the guy who trained him. Yuma Oyagi is in an unfortunate position because he's very young. I think he's 29 or he's not 30
something
yet.
Like that.
Yeah, he's still very young, but he's got caught in the middle between the generational shift because there are guys from the new generation who are older than him. For example, the Saitos are 9 years older, I think. But since he debuted 10 years ago, people feel like he's part of the old generation, which it isn't true. I mean, he was a rookie. He was there, but he wasn't doing much. He's still very young. He's part of this generation. Of course, in a storytelling sense, this was always going to be the discourse. And going back to what I said before, that Kento was not the guy to beat in this reign. I mean, when the match was first announced, the defense against Kento, people thought that, okay, this is the guy to beat to become the ace of the promotion. And then they changed it during the reign. The guy to beat right now is not Kento. The guy to beat right now is Yuma Oyagi, which is the coolest thing. Because, again, the way he lost the belt for the first time in his first reign, Yuma Oyagi, I'm saying, was very sad, was very unfortunate. So him being this kind of obstacle in the new Aces path is very cool and is very much needed and deserved.
Yeah, I think another point to bring up is Yuma put out his hand for Anzai to shake and Anzai denied it. He's like, just lowered his hand. He's like, I'm not going to shake it now. You know, I'll shake it later when I've earned your handshake.
Yeah, this is very cool. I love this kind of storytelling. I mean, it's not that complicated to do, but when it is done well, it's always effective. And it fit very well with the kind of storytelling of the story that they were trying to convey. And it was very, very cool. Also, going back to the match, because I don't think I've said a single thing about the match yet, because the story was so big that I was completely catched by that. But I think it could have been a better match. Not that it was a bad match. I think the thing that worked against the match was that it was a bit longer than most other defenses. I think it was about 27 minutes or something like that, which, I mean, he had defenses of 21 minutes. So it is definitely longer. The thing that damaged the match a little bit was the was a thing that in other matches worked very well in favor of Human's Ice Rain in showing how different he is from the others, which is the fighting spirit spots, the no selling, this kind of stuff. It went a little bit overboard with the fighting spirit, because I think they hit every move they had and some, because I've seen Yuma hit the Schwein, Chima's move, that I don't think I've ever seen Yuma hit before. Anzai hit every move he knew, basically, beside the gimlet, which was a very nice point of the story of the match, which he never was able to hit the move. And another thing that he had in common with all the other defenses is that it showed Anzai having a counter for everything. Even if he lost the match, he came on top on the elbow exchange. When they traded German suplex, he hit more than Aoyagi. And I think this was to say that, okay, he's trying to get the upper hand against Aoyagi, but it's not there yet. And I appreciated it. The thing is, too much fighting spirit can be damaging to the match. I mean, if it's too much, it's too much. And I think this was one of the cases in which it kind of went too overboard with it.
I found it weird that Anzai never hit the gimlet, because Aoyagi hit the Rockstar Buster and then the Fool, and Anzai kicked out of that. So why couldn't Yuma kick out of the gimlet? But save it for another time, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it's a story in progress. Maybe they were trying to say, okay, I didn't win because I couldn't hit the gimlet. You were good in avoiding the gimlet. Next time, I'm putting you down with the gimlet. Also, I just remembered that when Yuman Zai faced Nagata, he promised to win with another move, and the other move was the moonsault, which he never hit again. He never even tried to hit the moonsault. Now wow, that we're talking about his reign, I realize this thing.
It's like, totally forgot about that.
Yeah, me too. I just remembered because we were talking about all Anzai's moves, and I remember that for a minute he was trying to put the moonsault in his moveset, and then he never even tried to attempt to do the move.
All Japan had a thing with heavyweights doing a moonsault. Like Jake did one, and then never again. Ashino did one, and then never again. And we have Anzai as well.
Yeah, they are very against the moonsault.
It's a junior move only.
Yeah. Only Atsuki can do it. Yeah, the match had a lot of cool counters in its favor, by the way. There was a particular time when I think Yuma tried to hit his rolling kick, I think like four times in the match. And the last time he hit, the penultimate time, when the last time he missed, Anzai ducked under, then tried the gimlet, then Yuma struggled, and then hit him with the knee in the face. It had a very nice sequence of moves, but I think this was not something that worked in favor of the match, because it had a lot of cool moments, but they didn't gel well in the flow of the match, because it felt a little bit too long for what it needed to be. I think you can of course have even 60-minute matches. I'm not saying you can't have that kind of match, but you can have longer matches if you measure the pace. This match seemed to me it went too fast. It was too fast paced to last 26 minutes, especially if you hit every move that you can. Especially if you do a lot of moments when you kick out at one. Mm. I mean, I still think it was a very good match. I'm not going to say it's a bad. It was a bad match by no means. It was a great match, but I think their big match, just like against Honda, the big Yuma Anzai match against Yuma Oyagi match, we will have it in the future. We have in front of us a lot of big matches from Anzai, And I think we will get an incredible Aoyagi versus Tanzai match in the future. I think they were trying to see how they could fit with one another. Or maybe they went overboard, because especially because he was trainer and student. But I think this has the potential to be the big match of the immediate future.
Yeah, they definitely have better matches to come. And I think Anzai has a backstory. He just wants to defeat Yuma. He wants Yuma to recognize him as the guy who defeats him. Yuma is his wall, and he can't get over that right now. And it's going to be really fun to watch, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very excited for the future of the main event scene and the young guys in particular. And I'm definitely very, very hyped about what is going to happen. I don't know if not to date the episode, but I don't know if the Royal Road is going to be a step in Yuma's new reign or whatever it's going to happen. If it's going to slow things down for a bit, because tournaments are weird in that sense. But I'm very, very excited to see what's going to happen to these guys, because we are being shown that these guys are all going to be huge. And I'm very curious to see how they're going to portray all these many guys all together being big guys. It's going to be very interesting, and I'm very excited.
I think the only thing we know of time of recording is that we're going to get another Yuma Aoyagi versus Honda match, and it's going to rock.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
That was Yuma Anzai's first ever reign with the Triple Crown champion. We went through it all. Now we're just going to have a little fun. We're going to rank the matches from least favorite to favorite. I just want to say, even though what I just said about Yuma versus Yuma, there are no bad matches here. Each match is worth your time, and this is just our opinion. If yours is different, that's cool, and I'd love to hear what your ranking is. So for my sixth place, obviously I said Yuma Anzai versus Yuma Aoyagi.
Yes.
Okay. What about you?
Of course, we decided from the get-go to get out of the Nakajima situation, so Nakajima is not a thing in our discourse. Otherwise, Nakajima's match would have been, of course, the worst one. I think I'm with you. I don't think there have been bad matches. I love them all. I liked all matches. I think it was a stellar first reign. If I had to put one in the last place, and for a simple reason, and we talked about it, is the Suwama match. Because I think it showed that Suwama had issues. Now that we know, and watching the match, I kind of noticed that Suwama looked a bit out of the loop in some occasions. And I mean, if you have vertigo, it can happen. It's bound to happen. And by the way, it was a great match. I think it was still a great match. I'm actually a firm believer that Suwama cannot have a bad big match. Even with, he had great matches with awful opponents. And of course, Yuma Anzai is not one of them. And it had issues, but it was still a great match.
Sorry, my fifth place is actually Yuma Anzai versus Suwama. For the reasons you just said. And knowing that he was wrestling this match with vertigo and it was actually getting worse for him just makes it, I don't want to say impressive, because I think it was pretty stupid he did that. I thought he should take time off way before that. But I guess I'll just say impressive, because I can't think of another word right now.
Yeah, I agree. My fifth choice was Hideki. And again, I love this match. I think in the great scheme of things, this match didn't mean a lot. I mean, if we compared with the other guys that he faced, and that's why I'm putting it a bit lower. But I really love this match. I think it was the match that I watched the most. I think I watched it 3 times because I had a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the counters and all that stuff. But I put him a little bit down because of this reason. Not on a quality standpoint. From a storytelling standpoint.
I'll say for me, second, third, and fourth place, it was kind of shuffling around. But I just landed on for fourth was Yuan Zhai versus Hideki. Like, I'm basically just saying the match that you said. But yeah, like I said, like fourth, third, and second, they're just also good. Like, number one takes its top for me. But Hideki was just a great opponent for Anzai to get over.
Yeah, I was 3 and 2. That basically you can swap them however you like. Fourth, I put the Yuma match that you didn't like that much. And I found it very, very fun to watch. Very, very, very exciting because of his pace. I mean, I know I just said that the fast pace was a bit of a problem for what it was, but I mean, it was fun to watch. Also, I had to put him a little bit higher for what it meant. I mean, this was going forward, we will talk about the time when Yuman Zai lost against Shimo Yagi for the first time. It was the guy who stopped his first train.
So for third, I have Yuma Anzai versus Rei Saito.
Whoa.
I love this match, but the two I love more.
I understand. My third one was against my third one, yes, was against Honda. I love the match. I love the match. I love Yuma Anzai. I love Honda. I love that they had this kind of incredible match, both from a storytelling standpoint and from a work rate standpoint. And I know that they're going to have so many more matches that are going to be better than this. And this makes me happy. And yeah, I mean, as I was saying before, you can change this with the second with no issue whatsoever. But I really love this match.
Moving on to second place, I have Yuma Anzai versus Kento Miyahara. Kento does not produce a bad Triple Crown match. He is incapable. It's impossible for him.
Yeah, same, and for the same reasons. It was an incredible match. And it was a Triple Crown Kento match. I don't think you've ever had a bad one. I don't think you will ever have. And yeah, great match.
So it's pretty obvious what our number ones are, I guess. But my number one is Yuma Anzai versus Riki Honda. I absolutely loved it. I love the Yuma Honda pairing. I just think it just works so well. It has my spot of the rain where Honda caught the jumping knee and delivered a final bent. I just watched it, I think about 2 days ago again, and I just got the same feeling I did as watching it the first time. I love it.
Yeah, I jumped on the seat when that happened. I mean, my first one is obvious, is the one that still remains, the one against Ray. I'll go as far as to say that it is my match of the year, and I don't think any match will get better than this. This is exactly why I love All Japan. This match encapsulates exactly why I love All Japan, why I love Rei Saito, why I love Yuma Anzai. And also with this kind of crowd, you cannot absolutely have a bad match. And again, this is another match that I know that they have even better matches in front of them, and I'm incredibly excited. And also, I'm starting to believe that even though they are born to be a tag team, Rei and Jun are going to get a Triple Crown one day, each of them at least once. I mean, they're too popular, they're too good to not get the belt.
It is very, very true. But like I said, there were no bad matches. That's our ranking. I'm kind of surprised. My number one was your number three, and your number one was my number three.
Yeah, nice coincidence.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, we are kind of the same page.
All we did similar was Kento, number two.
Yes, yeah. Kento was the same place. Yeah, the first three matches were the same. We all inverted the positions.
Yeah. Out of all the reigns I've seen in All Japan, which is not a lot, I've only started watching in 2019, Anzai is really, really up there as one of the best. He might have liked the build that other people did, especially because I was watching like when Kento was in his, 500-day reign, and Suwama had that COVID pandemic reign, which I thought was good. I would never badmouth that reign. I thought it was good, Yuma's reign. I thought it was great, actually. He delivered every single match. He worked his way from the bottom to the top in a lot of matches. He had to really show fight and resilience. And he looks like a star already.
Yes.
Like we said, 2 years to this day is 2 years. And he's already had the Triple Crown champion and he's smashed it.
Yes. And also, we kind of talked about it, but given the size of the crowds that watched the matches, I mean, it's bound to happen that a lot of people were coming to All Japan for the first time. So I think Yuma's reign, I mean, I hate that there are two Yumas because I like to call them both Yuma. And Zai's first reign showed to All Japan that they can bring new fans and with their new faces, which is very important. And I mean, of course, to them it's still very important, but I think it was a very popular reign with the outsiders, people watching from overseas, because I've seen a lot of people talking about how much they love the reign. Because for a lot of people on Twitter, I'm talking about, they watched for the first time a reign, an All Japan reign from the start to the end. And a lot of people started watching because of Yuma's reign. And I've seen a lot of people talk about how great Anzai's reign was. And also, we didn't mention it, but they put a 1 month trial for new viewers. Mm. And they put it during the time of their new face, which is another indication they're giving to us that they were trying to bring in new fans. And I think it worked in their favor, because I've seen a lot of people talk about how much they enjoyed their first new reign of All Japan. And it was very, very cool. It was a nice idea. It was good thinking. And I think it paid in spades.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. You actually get Kento like commenting and retweeting people who've been like, oh yeah, this is my first time watching All Japan and I really like it. And you see that a lot, and people have said it's because of Anzai. So thank you, Suwama, for scouting Anzai.
Yeah, it really did us a favor. A solid.
Yeah.
I mean, we could say that Suwama should do that more. I mean, if he has this eye, come on, man, go outside, go scout the dojos, see people, because you understand, you basically have a great knowledge. Do us more of this favor.
But like, you've been watching All Japan much longer than I have, and you know more about the history. Like, where would you rate this reign? Like, middle, like towards the top, bottom?
I mean, I think it was a very great reign. For what it meant, for what it's going to mean. I mean, hopefully, you will never know what can happen in wrestling in general, but you know, Japan in particular, because we've seen it during the past years, unfortunately. But I think if All Japan's plans go where they wanted to go, I think this will go. This will be a very important reign even in the future. So I'll put him very, very much up there. It was a very good reign. It was very important for the people he faced. Quality wise, it was incredible, and it reminded me a lot of. I mean, they were not in the same position career-wise. The longer was the reign was longer, but it remembered me 2010's Suwama's reign. He was already a one-time champion in 2010. He already won the belt once, but the 2010 reign it was the reign that made Suwama the star that he is nowadays, and this reminded me of that because Suwama's first reign was shorter. Was not as popular or successful. So my second reign was very long, was longer, but for what it meant to the guy and the promotion, it was, I think, the same place.
Like I said, I don't have that much All Japan watch time under my belt, but just thinking out loud, I think, yeah, probably like Kento's long reign, Suwama, Yuma, and then Anzai. Unfortunately, like, it's better than Jake's, unfortunately, because he had just so many just weird things happen during his reign. Of course, it's above Nakajima's because...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I really don't like to remember that time.
Mm.
It was a very incredibly stressful time to watch All Japan. I think I wasn't distressed even when All Japan risked to go under when the Wrestle One split happened. I wasn't distressed at the time. maybe because I wasn't on Twitter, we didn't have All Japan TV, so you couldn't watch thing crumble in front of your eyes. But it was a very stressful time. And also, there were people that seemed to have joy, to get joy in the situation, which was very sad for me to watch. And yeah, it was very stressful. Nakashima is a great wrestler. I'm not going to say that he's a bad wrestler. I'm not an idiot. But as a champion, it didn't work in favor of All Japan, even if the crowds were good at the time. But all things considered, I don't think he gave All Japan anything lasting, except losing to Anzai, but that wasn't his choice. I mean,
we just got to do a bonus episode about like how much we hated Nakajima.
Yeah, we should.
Just ranting about it. No, but let's push that aside. It's about Anzai, yes. This one. And we have reached the end of the second bonus episode, and this was all about Anzai's reign. I would like to thank everyone for listening and supporting Jumping Knee Pod. You can find me on Twitter at Sister Jessie in Railroad 72.
I would like to thank you for having me again. And if you want to find me, if for any reasons, I am formerly known as Compa on Twitter, and now I'm Simone, FKA Compa, at Outsider Jipu. I am mostly shit talk, and I'm a goofy ass talking about All Japan and the guys and the boys, especially the Siders.
Well, like a huge thank you so much for joining me. You're so fantastic and fun to talk to. And like your Twitter is just Saito love. And that's what we need right now.
Yeah, it is. At the end of the day, it is. Yeah, I'm a big fanboy, I guess.
But thank you, everyone, once again. And I'll see you next time for more All Japan Pro Wrestling.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Do you have interest in Joshi, specifically stardom? And you've asked yourself, where do I start? How do I learn? Well, good news for you. The Countout Podcast Network has a podcast dedicated to the history of World Wonder Ring Stardom that can help you learn, watch, and enjoy. This is the Stardom Road Podcast, hosted by Trent Brewer and myself, Scott Evans. Every other week, we dive into the history of wrestling's biggest women's promotion today. We have you covered.
Stardom Road is the perfect podcast for new fans looking to learn all about the deep history of the wrestlers, events, and championships they're seeing for the very first time, or for those who have been there from the very beginning simply looking to remember the good old days. So join us for multi-episode deep dives into the history of key figureheads like Arita Hoshiki and smaller discussions on key role players like Chris Wolfe. Find out about the lineage of championships like the High Speed Belt or how the various tournaments have changed over the years. And of course, spend time with us discussing important topics like how to costume change battle royals or the very peak of the company.
You can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us on the Stardom Road.